The Red Cells of the Blood. From the Book of Knowledge, edited by Arthur Mee and Holland Thompson, Ph.D. We have been talking about living cells, which are the units of all living creatures, just as atoms are the units of the elements of matter. We have read of some of the simplest of these living cells, those which are complete creatures in themselves, such as microbes, the amoeba found in ponds, and so on. This prepares us now to study the most wonderful fluid in the world, the red blood, which is found in the bodies of all the higher animals, in which we know so well in ourselves. Though we think of the blood as a fluid, it is really crammed with living cells, red and white, upon the health of which our own health depends. In any case, we cannot know too much about the blood. Its health is our health. The number and life of the cells in it are urgent matters for us. We eat in order to keep its fluid part of the proper composition, so that it shall be able to supply the right kind of nourishment to every part of our body, from the brain cells down to the cells that make our nails. The gaseous part of the blood is a matter of life and death for us. We breathe in order that its composition shall be kept right, in order that the poisonous gases produced by the body and carried by the blood shall be got rid of, and in order that the life-giving gas, oxygen, shall be supplied to it in proper quantity. All these three parts of the blood, the cells, the fluid, and the gases, are absolutely necessary for life. But here, since we have been lately talking about cells, we may begin with them. On the whole, we may say that these cells are of two kinds, known as the red cells and white cells. The red cells are much the more numerous and the easiest to understand. In a volume of blood the size of about two pins' heads, there should be millions of these red cells. That will give us some idea of their tiny size. We could also count the number by taking a very small drop of blood, dropping it into a little well made in a glass plate, and covering it up and looking through the microscope. We know exactly how deep the well is, and the floor of it is ruled in both directions with tiny lines of which we know the distance apart. So if we count the number of cells we see in each of these squares, we can reckon the richness of the blood in cells. This takes a very long time, and it's very difficult to do, especially as the blood has to be diluted first. But it is very well worth doing, both for the red cells and the white cells, because their number changes very much in different states of health, and very often the doctor knows how to treat a patient just because he's able to watch these changes in the number of cells in the blood. All the color of the blood is due to the red cells. When we look at a single cell by itself, however, it is not really red, but yellow. It is the great number of them seen together that makes the blood look red. When you prick your finger, the drop of blood should be of rich red color. But in people who are living unhealthy lives or who are not quite well, the blood is often too pale, and these people suffer in many ways in consequence. The cells that make our blood red and the way in which they work. Breathing bad air is one of the chief causes of this paleness, for the bad gases in the air are poisons to the red cells and kill many of them, so that their numbers may fall to perhaps much less than half of what they should be. Also, the number of cells may be quite up to the mark, but they may not contain the right quantity of the yellow or red stuff, which is their business to carry about. The red cells are round and flat, and rather thinner toward the middle than toward the edge. When a thing is scooped out in the middle, it is said to be concave. And when it is scooped out on both sides, it is said to be biconcave. If it is rather flat, it is called a disc. So we say that red blood cells are circular, biconcave discs. Indeed, in shape, they are rather like the glasses which short-sighted people have to wear in spectacles. When the blood is healthy, the red cells are all of the same size and shape. We cannot see any nucleus in them. But each cell had a nucleus when it was younger. When they are grown up, so to say, they lose their nucleus. They cannot divide into two as many cells do, and they only live a short time in the blood, perhaps a few days or weeks. Then they are broken down and disposed of. This is going on all the time, and all the time new red cells are being poured into the blood. The living pillars of our body and the wonder that works inside them. They are made inside our bones. This is one of the astonishing things which many people find it hard to believe. They think of bones as hard, dead things which exist merely for the same reason as the pillars of a building. But these are living pillars, and the inside of them is filled with stuff called marrow, which is not only alive, but one of the most alive and most active tissues in the whole body. The cells in this red bone marrow, as it is called, have the amazing power of making the red cells which the blood picks up as it pours through the bones, and which keeps it always freshly supplied with cells. Unless, indeed, the red bone marrow falls ill, as it sometimes does. I think there is nothing, perhaps, which upsets the red bone marrow so certainly as having to breathe in pure gases brought to it by the blood, because we have been breathing foul air. As the blood flows in our bodies, the red cells are whirled along with it, but they do not move of themselves. They are very passive things, as different as can be from the white cells. They do not change their shape. Indeed, they seem to have an elastic covering which prevents them from doing so. They never eat up a microbe or an enemy in the blood. Sometimes we do see microbes in them, but that is because the microbes have killed the cells, not because the cells have eaten the microbes. The little carriers of hemoglobin, the coloring matter in our blood. What, then, is the use of the red cells which exist in such billions and billions in our blood? The answer is that their use is simply as vehicles, as carriers of the precious coloring matter they contain. This yellow or red matter has a long name, but it is so important that we must try to learn it. Its name is hemoglobin. The first half of this word is simply the Greek word for blood. Hemoglobin is probably the most remarkable chemical compound in the whole world. It is believed also to be much the most complicated. Indeed, the various compounds that we get when we split it up are themselves quite as complicated as any other compounds we know. We have learned in another part of this book that such a compound as water consists of molecules, each of which is made of three atoms. It is probable that there are at least 1,000 atoms in every molecule of hemoglobin. They are mostly atoms of carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen. But one of them, and it is absolutely necessary, is an atom of the metal iron. So hemoglobin follows the rule that the compounds of iron are usually colored. It is interesting to remember that just as iron is necessary for the most important colored compound in the animal body, so iron is always found in the most important colored compound in the vegetable body. The iron that makes blood red and grass green. That is to say, iron is one of the things that help to make color in the world. Not only the red in our blood, but the green coloring matter of leaves. It may be, then, that very humble forms of life can exist without iron, but at any rate, we are certain that iron is necessary for all the life of higher animals and plants. This tells us something about our food, too. The red cells, we learned, die and are broken up after a time, and their iron is lost. Iron is therefore a necessary part of our food. We should die without it. And perhaps it is interesting to know that the foods which contain iron and from which we get it include the best of all our foods, such as milk, eggs, bread, meat, potatoes, peas, rice, and oatmeal. The wines, which are supposed to be rich in iron and used to be ordered for this purpose, contain extremely little, nothing so much as is found in these common foods, and when anyone's blood is poor in iron, milk is worth all the wine in the world for him. But we have not yet said why this hemoglobin should be so important. We know that it is important since our bones are filled with material for making it, and since the blood is crammed with cells to carry it, and since we fall ill at once if the amount of it in our blood falls below the proper quantity. Hemoglobin carries the oxygen to every part of the body. It must have some great use then, and it certainly has. For it is this hemoglobin that carries the oxygen which we get from the air when we breathe to every part of the body. We have learned that every living cell must breathe or die. Every living cell of the body must get oxygen or die, and the only way in which it can get this oxygen is through the blood, and the only way in which the blood can supply it is by means of this hemoglobin. Now, what we have already learned will help us to understand what hemoglobin does. We must understand, in the first place, that the blood is always circulating through the body, and in the course of doing so, it passes through the lungs. Every few minutes, some say 4 minutes, every red cell in the blood passes through the lungs, and after doing so, it goes to various parts of the body, and so on again and again, until its life is ended and a younger cell takes its place. The whole meaning of its passing through the lungs is that there it finds oxygen. Perhaps it also finds many foul gases which injure it, but that is not its fault, but ours. It is to get oxygen that it goes to the lungs, and if we there expose it to poisons, which we have breathed by our foolishness, so much the worse for the red cell and for us, whom it is trying to serve. Now, the special point to note is this, that the fluid part of the blood and the white cells of the blood cannot take up, as they pass through the lungs, anything like sufficient oxygen for the needs of the body. It is only the red cells that can do this, and it is only because of the hemoglobin in them that they can do it. What goes to the lungs when we breathe? Sometimes there are plenty of them, but they do not contain enough hemoglobin, and then we suffer. Each molecule of hemoglobin has the power of combining with itself a molecule of oxygen. Now, no one knows the exact composition of hemoglobin, but let us, for convenience, give it a name of its own. Now, no one knows the exact composition of hemoglobin, but let us, for convenience, give it a name of its own, HB. We cannot call it H because we know that that stands for hydrogen. Now, a molecule of oxygen will be represented by O2. Well, when blood passes through the lungs, all the HB of the red cells combines with the O2 in the lungs and makes a compound which we call HbO2. This is simply hemoglobin and oxygen, and the long name for it is oxyhemoglobin. In contrast with this, we sometimes call hemoglobin when it is not combined with a molecule of oxygen, or when that molecule of oxygen has been taken away from it, reduced hemoglobin. We remember that when oxygen is taken from anything, that thing is said to be reduced. What comes to the lungs, then, is reduced or simple hemoglobin, HB. What leaves the lungs is HbO2. This makes a remarkable difference of color in the blood, for HbO2 has a bright and cheerful red color, the color of life, as it has been called, while HB itself has a much darker and more sullen color. We can see the difference at once in anyone who has a choking fit, for his skin becomes dark and purple. All the blood in it is full of HB instead of HbO2, because he is not getting air into his lungs. When he gets right again, the healthy color will return, owing to the air getting into his lungs, and the blood in his skin has plenty of HbO2 in it, instead of having only HB. Look at the back of your hand and see the blood running. If you look at the back of your hand or at the front of your wrist, you will see little blue lines. These are veins, and the blood in them is running up the arm. You can tell that it is doing so, for if you hang your arm down and run your finger firmly along one of these veins, say on the back of your hand, running your finger downwards toward the fingers, the blue line disappears. Then if you take your finger off, you can see the blood run upwards and fill the vein again. The vein looks bluish through the skin because the coloring matter in the red cells of the blood is of the dark kind. It is HB, not HbO2. And this blood is rushing back to your arm as fast as it can in order to get to the lungs where it will find fresh oxygen, which you are breathing in to get ready for it at this moment. And there, the HB will be made into HbO2, and the dark blood will turn bright again. This bright blood returns to the heart and is pumped by it to every part of the body, where its business is to give up its oxygen so that the HbO2 is reduced to Hb again, which is sent back to the lungs for more oxygen, and so on. The most wonderful thing about hemoglobin, then, is its power of picking up oxygen very easily, on the one hand, and of giving it away again very easily, on the other hand, wherever it is required. That is the whole duty and purpose of these countless red cells in our blood. If we are to be well and strong and useful and happy, we must have sufficient supply of red cells in our blood, and they must contain sufficient hemoglobin. So we must avoid anything that poisons them, or that poisons the bone marrow which makes them, and so prevents it from supplying them to the blood quickly enough. I think that bad air is much the most important of poisons we are all at all likely to meet in this country. But in great areas of the world, much the most serious poison of the red blood cells is the tiny living creature which causes the disease malaria. Certain kinds of mosquitoes carry this creature, and when they bite us, pass it into the blood, where it kills many of the red cells. We are beginning to abolish this disease by killing the mosquitoes that carry it. Why is it that men die if they swallow poison? The action of many poisons is due to the fact that they interfere with the work done by hemoglobin. Prussic acid, for instance, unites with the hemoglobin in the blood so that it can no longer take up oxygen. And a person poisoned with prussic acid therefore dies of a kind of suffocation. The blood passing through his lungs cannot pick up the oxygen in them. Alcohol also has a very interesting action on the red cells. Somehow or other, it makes the union of hemoglobin with oxygen much more stable than it usually is. The consequence is that it is not reduced by the tissues of the body as quickly as should be. They are thus not burnt up so well. And this is one of the reasons why people who take too much alcohol are apt to get stout. No one knows why alcohol does this. The End, read by Leonidas, for Lit to Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.